My mother's family has been on this continent for over 300 years. My father's family arrived on this continent nearly 400 years ago. Faced with oppression in Europe, they indulged their fight or flight instincts and risked everything they had for a chance to build their own life out of the reach of the ruling class. My family, those that survived the long months' journey across the sea, and the harsh winters that awaited them in the wilderness they set out to tame, were adventurers and pioneers. They settled the eastern seaboard and built the first communities in what would later become the United States. With their bare hands, they carved towns and cities out of the earth that still stand today. As life became easier, the softer men arrived, and a new establishment began to grow in these cities. My family grew uneasy with the influence these velvet-gloved aristocrats had, and chose once more to venture into the wilderness to escape. Again, they traveled west, sometimes on foot, for hundreds of miles through dangerous, uncharted lands that claimed the lives of many of them. When I was a boy, my grandfather shared with me the journal of his great-great-grandfather, who was one of these men, a pioneer that had led settlers across the North American continent. It was startling to read how frequently and easily he recorded the death of a family member, including his own children, lost to disease or the elements or some combination of the two. Death was the price of freedom for many of these ancestors of mine, and they paid it without hesitation. When I was young, I had the opportunity to visit the remains of a cabin that my great-great-grandfather had built with his own hands. The same harsh climate that had claimed the lives of three of his children had reduced the cabin to its foundation over the years, but I was still able to walk on the same dirt floor where my great-grandfather played as a child and look at the same forests and mountain ranges he saw every morning as he started his day in the land that his father had tamed. Land that my family has fought in war after war to defend. Land that they settled from coast to coast, east to west. And now here I stand, a descendant of these men. A man whose family predates this nation by over a century. I'm told that all of this means nothing. That we are just a nation of immigrants. I am told by the families and the descendants of families who came to this continent not to risk their lives and their wealth, but to collect the treasure and wealth that my family cultivated and provided. Families that rode gently down the river of my family's blood, that I am an immigrant, no different than they are. And to add insult to injury, no different than those who today violate the laws of my ancestors and the borders they fought and died to define. Borders they hoped would protect their descendants. And as they seek to distort the history of my people, as they blame my family for slavery, a practice none of my ancestors participated in, and if they did, it was they who were the indentured servants, not the masters. As I see these carpetbaggers and these locusts come to harvest the fields my family plowed for centuries, I feel, because it has been bred in my bones, the need to once again venture out into the wilderness to escape the leeches. But there's nowhere to go. We can no longer flee to the west. We cannot act as our ancestors did by abandoning the cities we built to the parasites who have arrived, fleeing our communities and allowing them to feast upon the fruits of our labor while we search for new frontiers to tame and flee to preserve our freedom. We have been desperately looking for a solution to this growing feeling inside of us. The same feeling that drove our ancestors across the Atlantic and then across the continent. An anxiety that drives the wild animal within to risk self-harm, to escape imminent danger when the chances for survival begin to drop dangerously near zero. There is nowhere to go this time. And that anxiety you feel building up inside is the wild animal that drove your ancestors into the wilderness, slowly coming to the realization that it has become cornered. For Blackpilt, I'm Devin Stack. If you like my videos, make sure you like and subscribe. Make sure you share. You can also help out by picking up a copy of my new book, The Day of the Rope. The link is in the description. Or you can go to patreon.com/blackpilled and become a patron.
If you currently have money in the bank, a 401k, or even precious metals in an IRA, you may want to listen up. You're going to want to have a place where you have a guarantee on your funds. As we go into a lower interest rate environment, banks will be stressed out when the commercial real estate crisis happens. Right now, you can get a guarantee. Yes, a guarantee on your principal. And get a 29% bonus. If you're younger than 65 years of age, we can utilize an insurance-based contract that has been around for over 100 years. And guess what? You get a guarantee on your funds. You get a guarantee on your principal. We want to help you find a guarantee on your funds that are actually outside of banking laws, outside of securities laws. Right now, as interest rates are getting lowered, we only have this special running to November 1st. Go to greenmoneysolutions.com, fill out your information, and let's just see if you qualify.
Several years ago, I went to see comedian Kamau Bell perform, and as a part of his act, he did something like a racial roll call to get the crowd warmed up. So he started out and he said, "Any black people in the house tonight?" And there was claps and cheers. And he said, "If you're black in here tonight and you're proud, I want you to put your fist in the air and yell black power." And all the black people in attendance with unison and with pride, they put their fists in the air and they yelled black power. And then he said, "What about Latinos? Any Latinos in the house?" And there was claps and cheers. And he said, "If you're Latino in here tonight and you're proud, put your fist in the air and yell, Latino power." Same thing. All the Latinos in unison with pride, they put their fist in the air and yell, "Latino power." And then Kamau said, "Any white people in the house tonight?" And there was a few claps, and he said, "If you're white in here tonight and you're proud, I want you to put your fist in the air and yell, white power." And there was silence.
Be with us as we offer up a prayer for the end of white supremacy.
I want people to come into our country in the largest numbers ever.
An unrelenting stream of immigration. Non-stop. Non-stop.
We will come here, we have been coming here, and we will continue to come here in hundreds of millions until indeed Gaddafi said a Europe will turn black.
The theory of the Great Replacement is about demographic change. It's about this idea that, I mean, they also use the language of white genocide, the language that that white populations are shrinking ethnically due to demographic change, and that through birth rate replacement, there will be a shrinking and ever-shrinking population of whites.
Some more news. The results of the 2020 census just came out, and for the first time in American history, the number of white people went down.
You see in some of these groups, especially the extreme right wing, there's this conspiracy theory about the great replacement conspiracy, essentially, which says that there's this great plot to replace white people with immigrants from other parts of the world.
You know, the great replacement theory, which says that white people are being systematically replaced by brown and black people who are, you know, allegedly, according to this false conspiracy theory, being brought in.
I think one of the challenges that governments and communities across the world have to face right now is understanding that even if that's true, we have to find ways to frame demographic change in other ways.
Folks like me who were Caucasian of European descent, for the first time in 2017, will be in an absolute minority in the United States of America.
Replacement conspiracy theory.
Absolute minority. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock.
That great replacement conspiracy theory.
That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
I think that for so long, the dominant culture has been white culture, that honestly, I think it's good that there's other voices getting the chance to be the dominant culture.
Great replacement conspiracy theory.
Part of this greater America that we see on the horizon and that is arriving daily is just simply waiting for old white guys like me to die off, and we're going to have a new America.
And you're okay saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
With a smile.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They put forth conspiracy theories with respect to white genocide and the Great Replacement.
This idea that this conspiracy theory, really, of white genocide, that there's going to be this great replacement, as it's called, of migrants from other countries replacing American citizens, and here in Europe as well.
Today I saw a thing in that said a lot of men, white men, were committing suicide. And I almost thought, yeah, great.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
They have a shared fear and conspiracy theory, something called the white genocide or the great replacement, which says that Jews are the head of this cabal.
Ensure that we can get this kind of material before it comes on to the internet.
A conspiracy theory, that of the great replacement.
Our country is changing. It's a demographically changing nation. White people will no longer be the majority of the country.
The end of white Christian America.
Because the demographic change between 1980 and 2000 in California, going from about two-thirds white to majority people of color, is the demographic change the United States is going through between 2000 and 2050.
This false conspiracy theory.
There is a major demographic change going on in this country. Whites are projected to lose their majority in the next 30 years or so, by 2043, according to the Census Bureau.
Country where the demographics are changing, it's becoming less white.
Correct. It's changing. White men are set to become, or white people are set to become majority minority in the next decade or two, whatever it is. And so by necessity, that those power structures will change.
With this massive demographic change in this country, whites are on the verge of losing their majority status.
America has changed demographically. White political clout is not what it used to be.
Whites will not be the majority. I mean, it's an exciting transformation of the country. It's an exciting evolution and, you know, progress of our country in many different ways. Clearly, there's, you know, among white supremacists, white nationalists, that is viewed as a horrific event.
This is not going to be the country of white people.
White British population has decreased by 600,000, while the minority population has increased by 1.2 million. So, yes, lads, we're winning.
We want, you know, people say demographics are not destiny. Well, we're trying to make it destiny. So that's the work that we're doing.
Amen. The fact of the matter is, the UK is never going to be white again. It's just not going to happen. People can wish it, but it's not realistic.
White Americans will soon be a minority, and that's great.
A lot of the real craziness comes, if you like, from rural white Americans who feel that they're losing their country, they're losing ownership of the country. And they're right. I mean, we are becoming more diverse, more multicultural, and they are, in the end, they are not the future. In the end, the power they still have will go away.
We actually, there's a number of studies that suggest we shouldn't be worrying too much about making white kids feel bad, because they get so much false messages about their goodness that it's actually kind of critically important for them. White guilt has to happen. It's a developmental need. If you believe in equity and you live in this kind of system and you're white, you're going to hit white guilt.
So this morning, the baby woke up and had some sort of violence in her heart. I don't know what it was, but she has been losing her mind all day. And it's interesting because I'm watching her lose her mind, and then I'm watching the preteen respond to that by trying to make her happy. And I have had to like actively tell him, stop trying to make her feel better, stop responding to her tears. It's so interesting to see the conditioning of people responding to white girl tears happening so early.
This little cutie is my son Bennett. As you can see, my son is a white male, so here are some books that I bought to help prevent him from growing up to be awful.
Michaela is a seventh grader at a majority white middle school. Her responses, according to our expert, Dr. Melanie Killen, could indicate a subconscious racial bias.
Dr. Donald Moss is an author and faculty member at both the New York Psychoanalytical Institute and the San Francisco Center for Psychoanalysis, where he tells his students that whiteness is contagious, can be passed on by other infected people, and that you are more prone to contract whiteness if you are white. So now Dr. Moss has published a report that calls whiteness a, quote, malignant parasitic-like condition that enables the host to have, quote, power without limit, force without restriction, violence without mercy.
I am, as a white person, a racist. It doesn't mean that I'm purposely, that my beliefs are purposeful and I'm doing things on purpose. And yet I can't be a white person living in this society and not be benefiting from racism.
America has a problem and its name is whiteness. So, white people, how does it feel to be a problem?
I realize that I'm white and that I have all the advantages of being part of that group, privileges that I don't really think I fully understood until yesterday. I was reading White Fragility. I'm like, oh, okay. I think I'm taking that next step in my journey to understanding what's happening, what equity is about, what racial equity is about, what anti-racism is about, and what racism is about. Obviously, I'm white, and I check the box that I'm white, and I grew up in an all-white school, all-white community. I was raised to be such an individual, and I think of myself as such an individual, that really, in thinking about this video, I realized that I'm white as part of a white supremacy culture.
And I want to understand white rage. And I'm white, and I want to understand it.
Well, I must say, to Claire's point, I'm increasingly embarrassed to be a white male these days.
All white people are racist. So I put this up because I really want any white person in the room to know up front that this is what we're dealing with, that it's not going to be this coddling of white tears and what that looks like. We're not going to discuss, oh, maybe some of us have worked it out. No, you're always going to be racist, actually. So even when you're on your path to trying to figure out how to be a better human being, because I believe that white people are born into not being human, like that actually instead of people of color and black folks being dehumanized, that actually everyone is dehumanized off rip within white supremacy, that y'all are born into a life to not be human, and that's what y'all are taught to do, to be demons. So in this particular way, white people are all racist.
Excuse me, I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry. I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you. But since I work for that company, my CEO has told me to come out today and to bring you on your knees because you have white privilege. So if they see that a white person is getting on their knees, that shows solidarity for the situation. The situation. And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege? Just apologize.
I am. I'm trying to think of the right words to say because that's a big thing to say.
It's big.
It comes from
It's large in this country.
I'm incredibly sorry.
I mean, first there were white settlers, and they often used terror and violence to take land from indigenous peoples. But then the very first real terrorist cell in America, first terrorist organization in America, was made up of white supremacist forces of the defeated Confederacy in the aftermath of the Civil War. And they arose because they didn't like the demographic change that was happening.
Would it be fair to say, based on your expertise, that white people are psychopathic?
I think so, yeah.
And white people make other people think that black people are bad, so that's why black people don't have power. If a white person kills a black person, is they call it self-defense, but if a black person kills a white person, it says murder.
So even the most liberal, well-intentioned white person has a virus in his or her brain. White people are always innocent, and their innocence constitutes their crime. It is too late to be innocent.
Realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, to the right, and we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
You know, all of these groups of people, the issues they face, it all comes from the same people, white men. So we need to get rid of them.
Our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country.
No, black power, white lives do not matter. You told white lives don't matter.
When we say we want to kill whitey, we don't really mean we want to kill whitey, we do.
White supremacy is on track to destroy the entire planet, and black power is the only thing that can stand in its way and stop it.
And there's a whole generation, I say this, you know, I said this, you know, for apartheid South Africa, I said this for my own, you know, community in the South. There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
O.C. Frangpong, who calls himself the funky academic online, recently commented on Facebook, some white people may have to die for black communities to be made whole.
Some white people may have to die.
You stick with that.
I'm confused on why that's so controversial.
And I kill all the white people in the movie. How great is that?
One idea is how we are going to exterminate white people, because that, in my estimation, is the only conclusion I have come to. We have to exterminate white people off of the face of the planet to solve this problem.
They are a race. They're trying to hold on to power because race has beginning and an ending.
Random assaults in Manhattan, including a possible hate crime. Police had released surveillance video of the suspect walking on the street shirtless. Investigators say he attacked at least four people this month, three of them on August 14th. A 58-year-old man in Chelsea was hit in the face while the suspect allegedly shouted anti-white comments.
The chief said Muhammad also told officers he hates white people. All three victims were white men.
Y'all racists go after white devils. We will continue to bring destruction and wrath upon America.
Postings on his Facebook page contain racially charged images and videos.
During the standoff, he said he wanted to kill white people.
He was upset about Black Lives Matter. The suspect stated he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers.
Bailey says at one point in the rant, the strange man threatens to kill every white person in the restaurant.
The vandals who spray painted Black Lives Matter and kill white people on walls, businesses, and homes.
According to witnesses, a large group of black teenagers rampaged through the Midway late Wednesday, with several fights breaking out, and there were several attacks that may have been racially motivated.
A group of four African-American men and women laugh as they strike the mentally challenged white victim. He's bound and gagged. They slice off his clothing and cut his hair until his scalp bleeds.
Go white!
jumped at every white person. Man, that white person come down Sherman. He white. Finish it, bitch.
If the goal is to dismantle white supremacy, and white supremacy is white culture, then the goal has to be to dismantle white culture and ultimately white people themselves.
Move the baby! Move the baby!
Squad cars from a North Hollywood division.
Whoa, whoa.
Broken. We saw something similar happen earlier.
Oh, Lord! Oh, no!
Experience on the ground confirms this. The number of open FBI domestic terrorism investigations this year has increased significantly. According to an unclassified summary of the March intelligence assessment, the two most lethal elements of the domestic violence extremist threat are racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists and militia violent extremists. In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race. The March assessment concluded that the militia violent extremist threat, which is described as those who, quote, take overt steps to violently resist or facilitate the overthrow of the United States government in support of their belief that the United States government is purportedly exceeding its constitutional authority, also increased last year and will almost certainly continue to be elevated throughout 2021.
Don't let the IRS rob you. Where is your money going? Over 4 million government credit cards by federal employees were used to make 90 million transactions with no accountability. DOGE has found $4.7 trillion in federal spending that is untraceable or fraudulent. You work hard to pay your bills, and a significant portion of your money is funneled to thieves and fraudsters through the taxes you pay to the IRS. The IRS wants you to feel powerless. Be a slave that shuts up and give them your hard-earned money. But there is a way out of this slavery. Freedom Law School has been teaching Americans for over 30 years that no law requires 99% of Americans to file and pay income tax. None of their students who have stopped paying have gone to prison or had their bank account or property stolen by the IRS. Go to freedomlawschool.org today to take 7 steps to freedom from IRS deception, robbery, and slavery. For freedom, go to freedomlawschool.org today.
If you work at a company and you don't like your boss, and everyone else that you work with doesn't like your boss, you can't just vote him out. He's your boss. He's not going to fire himself and then hire someone you like to replace him. You have no power in that situation. And that's exactly the situation that we're in right now. Hey guys, I was going to do a stream today, and but I think it's important that this information actually doesn't have any hiccups, and that I can possibly play even a few video clips that my bandwidth might not have allowed. And you know, it sure it sucks maybe that I you know we can't do the super chat thing or whatever, but I think it's more important that this goes on without a hitch. And in the spirit of live streaming, I'm going to try to just wing this as best I can and broadcast this to my computer and record it and then just upload it as soon as it's done. So it's going to be not as edited as a lot of my videos, perhaps. But like I said, I think this information is important, and I think this format works. Let's just have a discussion about this. What I want to talk about is how rule of law in this country is dead. And it has been for some time, but it's more obvious now. And what it's been replaced by is rule of man, or rule of ruling class. And there's a lot of you that might not understand what I mean by this. And so it's important that we understand the difference, because once you understand the difference, a lot of things that I think are puzzling to some people, like why no one ever gets prosecuted in the ruling class and that sort of a thing, and it'll make a lot more sense. And it'll make more sense than just this, you know, like the idea, oh, they're all blackmailed, which, you know, is very true, I think. But it's really kind of irrelevant. They don't have to be blackmailed, because the system, as people think about it, the system as perhaps it was at one time, the rule of law, that's what prevents the society from just descending into chaos. And so let's talk about what's important if you have a system that is governed by rule of law. If you have a system that's governed by rule of law, people have to respect the law. People have to honor the law. People have to, in some ways, fear the law. The law has to be preserved, meaning that you have to make sure that future generations also adhere to that same system, that they preserve it for their children and so on, that it keeps on going in perpetuity, so that you have this system keeping the society together and keeping it from just descending into chaos. And the reason why people decided on a system, or at least in America, that would be a rule of law system instead of a rule of like a monarch, is that the average person would have input in how the country was governed. So when you have a monarchy, for example, you're just basically at the mercy of the monarch. and whatever they decide, or a dictatorship, or, you know, and so on. Those systems that are explicitly a rule of man system or a rule of ruling class system, the lower classes are essentially at the mercy of the upper class. And whatever the upper class decides is what happens. Now, there's some benefits to this. I'm not going to say that it's all bad. But that's what it is. That's the difference. The rule of law system, and it doesn't necessarily have to be democracy, by the way, but a rule of law system is not governed by figureheads. It's not governed by monarchs. It's administered by figureheads. It's administered by presidents and the executive positions. But it's not the executive who decides how the country is governed. It's just the executives just simply carrying out the rule of law. That's not what we have right now. That has been replaced by a rule of ruling class. And so let's think about this for a second. The same things that apply to the law, because the law in a rule of law system is the governing entity, has to apply to the ruling class in a rule of ruling class, because they're now the governing entity. So whereas a rule of law system has to preserve the law, people have to fear the law, people have to respect the law, people have to honor the law, and you have to pass that down to your children so that they also respect, honor, and preserve the law. The same now applies to the ruling class in a rule of ruling class system. So now, and this is what's true right now, people have to respect the ruling class. People have to honor, revere the ruling class. And people have to preserve the ruling class in perpetuity. That means it has to go on forever. It can't be interrupted. Now, we'll get into this in a second. That's why we're seeing the lack of prosecutions to members of the ruling class, because you cannot undermine the ruling class any more than in a rule of law system can you undermine the law. If you undermine the law in a rule of law system, you've broken the rule of law. And it becomes something else. Well, it becomes kind of what we have now because it has been undermined. So if you undermine the rule of ruling class system, you take out the Jenga piece. Like, it's a very fragile, well, so is rule of law. Both systems are very fragile. And if you take out that last Jenga piece that makes the tower collapse, that's what the ruling class is afraid of. That if you prosecute Clinton, if you prosecute Obama, you prosecute Bush, any of these people, that you will be destroying the system that keeps them in power. And they probably justify in their minds as it keeps us from descending into chaos. And that's very important to understand. That's very important to understand because it makes everything make a lot more sense. You know, today, Attorney General Barr, who, if you know anything about his background, you would know that he's ruling class through and through. This guy wasn't brought in to like shake things up and to take down the deep state or anything like that. And he said today, and I'll play the clip if I can find it. I tweeted it out. He said that this investigation that all the trust the planners think that is going on, that's going to take down the ruling class, Durham's investigation. He explicitly said today that investigation is not going to lead to the prosecution of Biden or Obama?
As to President Obama and Vice President Biden, whatever their level of involvement, based on the information I have today, I don't expect Mr. Durham's work will lead to a criminal investigation of either man.
And we all know that Biden and Obama performed an abuse of power. I mean, if we're talking about a rule of law system, which we're not, though, by the way, and this is proof, that if in a rule of law system, it wouldn't matter that Obama was the president when he illegally used the federal agencies to spy on Trump's campaign. Okay? That abuse of power, which makes Watergate look like a speeding ticket, that will not lead to any prosecutions because the law doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. See, that's the thing. When you're no longer in the rule of law, the law doesn't matter. To the ruling class, at least. At that point, the law just becomes a weapon that the ruling class can use against the other. Which in this case is, and in almost every case, is us. The laws don't matter. I mean, Lindsey Graham, before Barr even came out, Lindsey Graham came out and was scoffing at the idea that having Obama testify.
And I think it'd be a bad precedent to compel a former president to come before the Congress. That would open up a can of worms. And for a variety of reasons, I don't think that's a good idea.
So let's talk about a few things that happen when your rule of law system mutates into a rule of ruling class system. Okay? Now, first of all, the things we just discussed, the ruling class has to be treated like the law. And it can't be undermined, it can't be questioned. But there's another important thing, a very important difference. In a rule of law system, if you don't like the law, there are legal means to change the law. In a rule of ruling class system, if you don't like the ruling class, there is no means of changing the ruling class. Because there's no law. You see what I'm saying? There's no, even if there might be a means in terms of, you know, oh, we have elections or whatever. But as anyone that's paying attention knows that doesn't change anything. When Trump got elected, he didn't lock up Clinton. You know, when Obama got elected, he didn't lock up Bush. No one that's been elected since JFK has locked up the people responsible for that, including Trump, because of this, and all for the same reason. Even if they're legitimately wanting different things and there is a legitimate struggle between a left and a right faction, it doesn't matter. They're part of the same machine. And they can't dismantle the other side without destroying their side. Because it's like saying you could demolish half of a building. Well, if you live in the other half of the building, you don't want to demolish the other half, because there's a good chance your side will fall down too. So in a rule by ruling class system, there's no possible way, no political or legal way to remove the ruling class. Whereas in a rule of law system, there are political and legal means to change the law. So that is a very important difference. And it presents a problem that a lot of people don't want to face. Which works out for the ruling class, by the way, because the ruling class needs you to keep thinking that it is a rule of law system. And they know that so many people are afraid of knowing that it's not. That they're just ready to believe any excuse. And like, oh, that'd be unprecedented. We can't do that. Reason why you can't prosecute or compel a private citizen. Obama's just a private citizen, by the way. You know, if we're in a rule of law system, which we're not. He's still, see, that's the thing. In a rule of law system, once you stop administering the law, once you stop being president, from a legal standpoint, Obama's just like you. But that's, you. Everyone knows that. See, that should be proof right there. Everyone should understand that. That from, if we were in a rule of law system, not just Obama, but like every past president, they're just, at that point, they're private citizens. You can say, oh, well, they have Secret Service, you know, whatever, as a favor. They get Secret Service protection for the rest of their lives. And you know what? Whatever. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But even if you take that out of the equation, everyone knows Obama's not just some private citizen. He's someone that can't be compelled to testify. Lindsey Graham's telling you that. He's someone that can't be prosecuted. Bill Barr is telling you that. You are immune to prosecution and to legal repercussions if you are a member of the ruling class. Now, does that mean no one will ever be prosecuted at all? Well, I don't think that that's the case, because enough people now are starting to understand what I'm talking about instinctively. Even if they don't quite, I mean, at this point, when you see over and over and over again the ruling class caught red-handed doing highly illegal things, treasonous things, and paying no price, eventually what happens, and this will happen, by the way, everyone starts treating the law like it's something that you will only get in trouble for breaking if you get caught. You know, there's no longer, because the social contract between you and the ruling class has been broken, right? You know, the social contract that says, you know, we are all equal under the law, that's been broken. And what's going to happen is the average person will understand this, and they will start treating the law like these are the things that I might get in trouble for doing if I get caught. But I'm kind of a sucker if I obey the law, because no one else is obeying the law, right? Like if we are no longer equal under the law is, it's meaningless. If it's just ruled by ruling class, then as long as I don't get caught by the ruling class, then that's what's legal. But you see, we're not at that point yet. We're headed in that direction. We're headed to a point where the average person is going to just try to get away with as much as they possibly can, because you're a sucker if you don't. Because everyone else is going to start doing that. And that'll spread like a virus quick. It'll be surprising how fast that happens. How quickly we go to like Banana Republic style. It's on the way. It's already started. And so, because the ruling class doesn't want that to happen, or at least wants to try to slow that down, they might burn some sacrificial lambs. Okay? A good example of this would be Epstein, right? Epstein served his purpose. So they killed him. They sacrificed Epstein to preserve the rest of the ruling class. So they're willing to do that. They will burn someone if it preserves the rest of them. See, burning Obama, burning Hillary, that's not going to preserve the rest of them. How would it? In fact, it might endanger the rest of them. Imagine the shit that Obama and Hillary know. Or even like, you know, some of these ex-heads of intelligence agencies like Brennan. Imagine what he knows. Now, what about people like McCabe? I don't know. I feel like that's about as high as it would ever go. McCabe's a possibility. And it might even be a situation where they tell, like, look, McCabe, people are out for blood. We need to give him someone. Let us put you in jail for 5 years. In the meantime, you know, we'll make sure your family is well taken care of. And when you come out in 5 years, you'll get a job on the board of, you know, something. And I feel like that if those that they need to burn to preserve this illusion for the people that haven't quite figured out what's going on yet, that don't play along, they'll just Epstein them. And come on, that was a pretty public execution. If you're McCabe, and you know that, like, wow, they very publicly executed Epstein, and nothing happened to anybody. And nothing will. And no one thinks that anything will. Like, really, come on. You have a few crazies that think that he's still alive. And, you know, maybe he is. It doesn't really matter, right? But nothing. No one's going to get in trouble for anything tied to Epstein. So if you're McCabe, you're going to know that, oh, well, I don't want to be Epstein. Maybe I'll just shut up and play along. So I think that's important that people understand the key differences between rule of law and rule by ruling class. That everything that applies to rule of law has to apply to rule of ruling class. The ruling class has to be preserved. The ruling class has to be honored and obeyed. The ruling class has to or can't be undermined. Another thing that you need to think about too, in a rule of law system, law enforcement enforces the law. The law dictates what police do. The law dictates what the military does. You know, the force that's exerted by the government is governed by the rule of law. The limits placed on that force are defined by the law. Well, when you're in a rule of ruling class system, it's now defined by the ruling class. As we've seen with people getting arrested for not wearing masks. If you want to, you know, here's Alan Dershowitz. I'm sure you've seen this video. Hopefully you've seen this video by now. Alan Dershowitz is explaining to you that in a rule of ruling class system, if they have to drag you kicking and screaming to a doctor's office and shove a needle in your arm that you don't want put in your arm, that's what it'll do. That's what'll happen. That's what the ruling class will say it has to happen, and that's what the law enforcement will carry out.
Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread a disease, even if you disagree. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business.
Wait, can I stop you? No right not to be vaccinated, meaning if they decide you have to be vaccinated, we have to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm.
There might be a few sheriffs out there that'll ignore this, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, we're talking like on a national level. What we're going to see is law enforcement enforcing illegal orders all the time because they're not limited by the law. They're not governed by the law. They're limited and governed by the ruling class. A ruling class that cannot be replaced. I mean, think about it. If you work at a company and you don't like your boss, and everyone else that you work with doesn't like your boss, you can't just vote him out. He's your boss. He's not gonna fire himself and then hire someone you like to replace him. Why would he? Now, he has a boss, and his boss might replace him, but you have no power in that situation. And that's exactly the situation that we're in right now. You have no ability to change the ruling class any more than you have any ability to switch out your boss and get a boss that you like. The only options available to you now to change the ruling class are literally the exact same kinds of options that would be available to you in getting a different boss. You could try to go over his head to the next level up, but good luck with that. You're going to have a meeting with the bankers. They're going to pencil you in. You're going to go brunch with a Rothschild. No. So that's not possible. And then there's other options that we can't discuss on YouTube. But that's the situation, guys. We are in a system that is not as advertised. Now, I tweeted out yesterday, or I think last night, something along the lines of, if the average person knew what you know now, would there be a revolution tomorrow? And I think most people, I mean, there were some people that were black-pilled and thought, well, even if they knew, they wouldn't do anything. And that, you know, that I guess that's a possibility. But clearly, I think the big holdup, honestly, is they just don't get it. They don't want to get it. And that's part of the problem. They don't want to get it. And it's almost impossible to teach an old dog new tricks. So there's going to be people that'll just never, ever get it. But I think everyone realizes if everyone knew what you know now, we'd be living in a different world. And that's why it's so important that you have these kinds of conversations, the kind of conversation we're having right now, that you have this kind of conversation with the people in your life. Sit down with some friends and just break down what I just talked about just now. You don't have to make them watch my video. It's not about me. It's about understanding that we're living in a system that's not as advertised. Unfortunately, the same hubris that got us transition from a rule of law system to a rule by class system is the same hubris that makes them believe that they can avoid the inevitable. So rather than trying to get us on the right track, get us back onto a rule of law system, like a lot of people thought Trump was going to do, they're simply going to try to create as many obstacles as possible for people that are going to try to undermine the rule of class. You know, I've talked about in the past where revolutions were a lot easier in the past because you could very easily, without any kind of surveillance, meet with people. You could meet with half the town in a barn somewhere. And if you were sneaky about it, the ruling class would never know. You can't do that kind of a thing anymore. And that puts a major obstacle in the way of people that want to change things. So people are going to have to be a little more clever about it. And because, like I said, it's still inevitable. It's going to force evolution in thinking about how to deal with this. I mean, it's not going to just be as simple as looking at the past and how did people deal with tyranny in the past, because a lot of this technology fundamentally changes those things. And it's going to be up to us to try to figure out this new revolutionary technology that is able to combat the technology of tyranny. Another thing that changes when you're in a rule by class or rule of man system as opposed to a rule of law system is you start to see, and this is the very beginnings of the complete breakdown of the rule of law and the general public. Before, you see people in their everyday lives just trying to get away with as much as they possibly can and not treating the law as anything that that should be revered or respected, more of a suggestion, you know, whatever I can get away with kind of a thing. They first apply that morality to their leaders. A lot of you might remember when Trump was saying that if he went down in Manhattan and just started shooting people in broad daylight, that people would still vote for him.
They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
And he was right, by the way. And everyone knows he was right. And that's why it was funny. It was funny because it was true. But a lot of people don't realize that that is a symptom of this problem. That is a symptom of being under a system that's rule of the ruling class and not rule of law. It's a slightly exaggerated example, but it's definitely, there's a lot of truth to it. And that's because when you're in that system and the law is no longer defining what people can and can't do, and it's the ruling class that defines what they can and can't do, then the person that you perceive as being your guy in the ruling class, he is the law. If he wants to go around shooting people in downtown Manhattan, he's the law. And come on, let's be honest here. It really wouldn't matter to a lot of Trump supporters. It would not matter what Trump did. If you had him on video murdering a grandma, they wouldn't care. And I'm not saying like they wouldn't believe it and they'd be like, oh, fake news, cognitive dissonance. Yeah, you'd have those people too. But you'd have a lot of people that would know. They would know. They would know that it was real. And they wouldn't care. Because the law doesn't matter anymore. See, that's the first phase. That's how it starts. Once you see that the ruling class is ignoring the law, the first phase for the public is they no longer hold their guy accountable for breaking laws. Yeah, look at the Democrats. They've been doing this for decades. This is not a new thing. And that's because the Democrats are more comfortable with this idea of rule by ruling class. So when their guy, this is how a lot of this got lopsided in the left's favor, by the way, is the left had no respect for the law, really, ever. So when their guys were breaking the law, they didn't care. They weren't holding them accountable for it because they're comfortable with the rule by ruling class. Whereas the right, at least in the United States, is not comfortable with that. So when their leaders, and not so much now, but when their leaders would break the law, they would want that person to be kicked out of the ruling class. And sometimes it happened. Sometimes it didn't. And it's really happens almost not at all now on either side. But that's how it starts. It starts with the public stops applying the law to their betters. But that slowly trickles down just like everything else. Eventually, people don't apply the law to themselves either. And then it is just a game of whatever you can get away with. All right, well, that's about all I wanted to talk about with you guys. I did want to talk about the movie. I'm still working on the movie. It's been really tough. I've been trying real hard to get everything done around the homestead. I'm by myself, so a lot of the stuff's really difficult to do by yourself, and especially just with the specific problems that I've had, and just it's been rough. So it's been hard for me to maintain every communication with everybody that wants to be involved and everything. It's tough. And part of the problem is too, is look, I'm not the best at community building. I'm not, but what makes it even more difficult is when that's already like a thing and we're kind of in a situation where it's hard to trust people. You know, it's hard to trust people right now. We no longer live in a high trust society. And I'm sure there's tons of you guys listening who I'd love to have help out with this and help manage it. But there's a lot of people who don't mean well. And so there has to be some kind of vetting process. And I haven't had time to really sit down and do that. So that is still in the works for sure. I've gotten some pretty cool stuff has been submitted. So there has been some cool stuff submitted already. And I do need actors that want to be in it as well. So if I'd love for you to make your own, like, you know what? I'm going to do a whole video just on this coming up. So I don't want to get too into the weeds about the Day of the Rope film. I don't want people thinking that that's just gone away. It has not gone away. That is 100%, 110% going to happen. It's just something that I haven't been able to put enough energy into, and I want to set up a website for it and all this other stuff. So there's like a centralized location for all the information on that. So anyway, I hope you guys are having a good Monday, best you can, and staying safe. For Blackpilled, I'm Devin Stack. If you like my videos, make sure you like and subscribe. Make sure you share. If you want to support my work, you can grab a copy of my book. The link is in the description, or you can send crypto to one of the addresses below, or you can go to patreon.com/blackpilled.
Stress, anxiety, feeling out of alignment? You don't have to live this way. At Ezra Healing, we guide you back into balance with our new health paradigm. Personalized options and soul-centered practices. It's not about quick fixes. It's about true transformation.
Our philosophy is do no harm, model of care. And we are really focusing on people with vaccine injuries. Our mission is to help people understand what cancers are and bring solutions and relieve pain and suffering.
No waiting rooms. No gaslighting.
The ivermectin is a moment in time in your life to get rid of parasites. And if you're struggling with cancer, we get rid of cancer. If we have a vaccine injury, we're going to alleviate that. But the goal is to, you know, eliminate, you know, anything, you know, foreign in your body. So we use these supplements, these medications for a point in time in our life, eliminating anything that lowers your vibe.
Language is a reflection of thought. Sometimes we say what we're thinking, and sometimes we choose words to affect the way in which the listener will think. Your choice of words can reveal a lot about you, especially if these words are repeated over and over and over again. For example, the left often uses the word powerful when pushing their agenda, or sometimes a slight variation like empowering. It's a word so often repeated, and its use in leftist propaganda is so predictable that it has become a joke among thinking people who know that whenever they see this word, whatever follows is likely a twisted version of reality. But what does it really mean? The right never talks about power unless they're talking about limiting power or expressing that the government has too much power. Instead, the modus operandi of the right is to use words like freedom, liberty, independence, but not the left. They talk about power. They speak of power because, unlike the right, freedom is not their focus. It's not their goal. It's not even desirable. It is in complete opposition to what they seek. And what they seek is power. It's not just the obviously power-hungry leftist elite that want power over your country, power over your data, power over your money, power over your voice. But even the lowest of the low in the leftist hierarchy, what they all want, what they all must have, what they all obsess about is power. That's why leftist propaganda promises power. They wouldn't sell it if they thought their followers wouldn't buy it. But they do buy it. They buy into the lie that if you support their agenda, they will be empowered. Destruction of the family is powerful. Destruction of culture is powerful. The confiscation of rights and liberties is powerful. They don't want the freedom to act and think differently. They want the power to force you to act and think as they do. Because like the drunken alcoholic who becomes enraged when you turn down a drink, they hate you for it. They hate that you won't join them in their misery and their degeneracy. They hate it because deep down, underneath all the programming and mental gymnastics, they know what they're doing is wrong. Just as the drunk knows and reacts with anger to hide their shame. They know. The only way they can quiet that small voice in their head, that last dying gasp of a conscience, is to destroy everything that reminds them of how far they have fallen. There is no such thing as corruption if there is no such thing as purity. So purity must be as contaminated as they are. If you don't join them, then you are a living reminder of their bad choices, and they need the power to remove you permanently from their line of sight. Even if we were to ignore these clues left behind in their language, their behavior is an even better demonstration of this lust. I'm not even talking about the way they threaten venues to have speakers shut down. And I'm sure we're all familiar with the tactics they use to deplatform their opposition. They use force against ideas they dare not engage with intellectually, because that voice in their head knows they are wrong. Sometimes this need for power manifests itself in the darkest of ways. From the lowest rungs of their power structure all the way to the top, we see headline after headline documenting their condition. Rape and child abuse is not about sex, after all. It's about power. the power to destroy and discard other humans, consuming them like disposable, single-serving delicacies, forcing their wretchedness on the innocent, corrupting anyone and anything foolish enough to trust them so that they can hush that still small voice in their head by shocking it into silence and infecting everyone around them with their virus. And they will never, ever have enough power. This is why they must be stopped, because their drive for power escalates with every violation of human decency they commit to silence that voice in their head, and it's become a perverse, infinite loop of shame and outrage that will never stop, so long as there is virtue in the world, and so long as they're allowed the power to destroy it. If you like my videos, make sure you like and subscribe. If you'd like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/blackpilled. Also, you can donate to the crypto addresses below.
What these researchers found was that vaccinated children had 4.29 times the rate of asthma, 3.03 times the rate of atopic disease, 5.96 times the rate of autoimmune disease, and 5.53 times the rate of neurodevelopmental disorders.
A number of different diagnoses, including diabetes and ADHD, and a number of them, in the unvaccinated group, they were zero. In other words, all these chronic diseases that we're accepting, the reality is maybe 99% of them don't have to exist in children. That's not the way God made us. They looked at over 47,000 Medicaid claims between 1999 and 2011. Those who were vaccinated versus unvaccinated, I'd say an odds ratio of like 2.81 to 1. So that would be 181% increase. Epilepsy seizures, 252%. Learning disorders, 581%. If you look at all these different diagnoses, they're all higher. For example, I'll just give you one example. Learning disorders in the full term is 581%. In the preterm, the ones who were vaccinated, 884% increase. Every single vaccine has an excipient that is a human toxin.